Energy Stew with Peter Roth, Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And for this show, I'm going to make a prediction that by the end of the show, you're going to be a more creative person. This is a show about not only about creativity, but about the skills of creativity. Actually, how we can make ourselves more creative. And there are specific ways to do that and understandings to have about it that are very important. And to do that, I have an expert on the show who is well known for leading creative workshops and working with many important corporations on building creativity. And he's written a book called Creative Thinkering. This is a book that tinkers with thinkers. And I love the title, and I'm so glad to have as a guest on the show the author, Michael Michalko. Michael, welcome.
Oh, thank you very much, Peter. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm so glad that you could bring your creativity to the show. It was fascinating. I love your book. It really is helpful. It's amazing what we don't know about being creative.
Right. Well, you know, we are all born creative and spontaneous creatures, every one of us. If you talk to a preschooler, give a preschooler a box, that preschooler will imagine a million different possibilities they can do with that box. It could be a house, a fort, a ship, a plane, a desk. They could draw a face on it. It could be an imaginary companion. They're thinking inclusively. They're thinking about all the possibilities you can imagine to do with this box.
Right.
That's
and when
the
you
way we all were before we go to school.
Right. And when you give it to an adult, they look at it and they go, oh, it's a box.
Yeah. We go to school and we're taught to be logical, analytical, reproductive thinkers. And now a box becomes, we label it as something that contains something. And that's all a box is. And so we are taught to be exclusive thinkers. We're taught to be negative, judgmental thinkers who exclude possibilities instead of including possibilities. And you can see, you can hear that, you know, your thoughts become your words. And you can hear this in the way people talk. You ask somebody how they are, and they'll say, not bad. What does that mean? Every other day I feel bad? Or you give an idea to your supervisor at work, and the supervisor says, it won't hurt. That means everything I gave you before it does hurt. So we're looking for ways to figure out what can't be done, what can't work, instead of looking for ways to get things done and make things work.
Well, what I like about the book is it works in two different ways. One, it works to help us understand ourselves and our process and how to shift our process so that we can be open, in for instance, even in our speech.
Right.
And the other way is that actually you understand how creativity works in bringing things together in how to invent creativity.
Right. Creative thinking requires the generation of associations and connections between dissimilar subjects. When you're thinking inclusively, you're including everything in your thinking. And you make as many associations and connections as you can. For example, what is the connection between a shower head and a telescope orbiting the Earth? You know, they're unrelated. They have nothing in common. Yeah, James Crocker, who was a NASA engineer on vacation in Germany, heard about the Hubble telescope fiasco. They could not focus the telescope on Earth. It was a multi-million dollar fiasco. But he was taking a shower in Germany in his hotel room, and he's looking at the shower head, which in Europe is adjustable. You can adjust it to the person's height. And he's thinking about that while simultaneously thinking about the Hubble telescope. And he made the connection. He called NASA and he said, the solution to your problem is to create what he called COSTAR, a bundle of coin-shaped mirrors that could be inserted by an astronaut into the telescope and that could be adjusted on Earth by the technicians. It saved the project. This is an idea that you can't get using your usual way, conventional way of thinking. In fact, NASA had pretty much given up on the project until Crocker had this insight. You know, Louis Braille was a 9-year-old boy in Europe, and he was blinded helping his father make harnesses for horses. He loved to read, and he figured out, now that I'm blind, I can't read. How can I read? And he's thinking hard about this problem every day. And while he's thinking about it, one day he picked up a pine cone. And he's fingering the pine cone, and he's thinking, pine cone and reading. How can a pine cone help me to read? And then he noticed the different protrudences were, they were all different in height. And he got his insight. He made the connection. Raised lettering on paper and invented Braille, which billions of people have been able, blind people now have been able to read because of this connection that he made. And again, you can't get that kind of idea using your logical, reproductive way of thinking. Right. We're taught in school how to reproduce what past thinkers have thought. We learn what has worked before, and then we analytically apply that to whatever problem we have. And consequently, we keep coming up with the same old ideas over and over again. You know, in nature, a gene pool without variation is unable to adapt to changing circumstances. And eventually, it will convert to foolishness and not survive. Well, the same process occurs within human beings when it comes to creativity. We all have a rich repertoire of existing ideas and concepts. But without provision for variation, our ideas grow stagnant over time. Now, how does nature get variation? Nature gets variation by genetic mutation, something that's unrelated to the parental chromosomes, something that happens randomly or by chance. And then the process of natural selection takes over, and the mutants that survive create new species or improved species. And the same thing happens in our thinking with creative thinkers. When they want creative ideas, they will introduce something totally unrelated or something that happens randomly or by chance into their thinking that will create different thinking patterns, which give you different ways to focus on the information and different ways to interpret what you're focusing on.
Right.
Leonardo da Vinci was the first to discover that the human mind is such that it is impossible to concentrate on two subjects, no matter how dissimilar, without a connection being formed. And consequently, he, who had little formal schooling, by the way, he was not allowed to go to university because he was the product of a single mother, and at that time you were not allowed to go to university. He wrote about his technique of what he called connecting the unconnected in his notebooks backwards, so that if somebody discovered his notebooks, they wouldn't be able to understand his technique, which was connecting unrelated subjects. For example, one day he was thinking about sound. How does sound travel? And he's throwing pebbles into this pond, and he's noticed the ripples that were going outward from where the pebble hit. He's thinking about sound, and a church bell goes off in the distance. And he made the connection. Sound travels in waves. Now, what he would do in a studio is he would take a paint-filled sponge and toss it at a wall, and he would look at the patterns that the paint made. And he would imagine what these things were. Like, he might imagine, well, that looks like a rider on a horse. Then he would say to himself, the horse looks like it has wheels on it. Now, can I invent something, a mode of transportation, that has wheels, that looks like a rider on a horse? And from that, he invented the bicycle. Now, Da Vinci, you know, he's the, I think, most revered genius of all time. And because he had little education, he did not fragment his thinking into domains. Many scholars today, you know, it's either science or poetry or religion or, you know, chemistry. They divide everything into these little compartments. To Da Vinci, knowledge was knowledge. And that's why he was so polymathic as a genius. He created in the arts, business, science. He created even in the military all these creative innovations. Because to him, there were no boundaries. There were no barriers.
And that's because he couldn't go to school.
Yeah. Well, Einstein, you know, when Einstein was in elementary school, his teacher had him go to the board and write 13 on the board. Then the teacher said, what is half of 13? And Einstein replied, well, half of 13 is 6.5 or 6.5. However, there are many different ways to express a 13 and many different ways to have something. For example, if you write 13 in Roman numerals, X, 1, 2, 3, now divide it in half vertically, now half of 13 becomes 11 and 2. And he did this about 20 different ways. And his teacher took him home that night and told his parents that he was mentally disabled. Pablo Picasso, when he was in school, the teacher wrote the number 9 on the board and said, Pablo, what is that? And he said, that's the number 9, or it could also be the wing of a dove. He was considered to be emotionally unstable. Beethoven's parents were told that he was too stupid to be a music composer. Isaac Newton's parents were told he was the most unlikely student they ever had. You know, it seems like all these creative geniuses throughout history, you know, had trouble in school because they insisted on looking at everything in different ways and coming up with different ways to try to solve the problem.
Now, the thing is, okay, these people can think outside of the box.
Right.
But we're listening to this and saying, now, am I able to think outside of the box? Am I, you know, how can I apply myself in ways that are not trying to be logical? Or, you know, that's a learning skill.
It's a process of learning how to become a productive thinker. And the process can be learned by anyone. It requires, you know, sitting down. First of all, you have the belief. You have to believe that you can do it. And if you have the belief, you have to have the intention you can be a creative thinker. And if you have the intention to be a creative thinker, you have to go through the motions of being a creative thinker.
Like picking up the book Creative Thinkering.
Right, which is a combination of the word thinking and thinker. You know, thinking is the process, productive thinking, which is a very natural process that we have forgotten that we had because of education. And thinker, you have to have a belief, the intention, and go through the motions. You know, in Tibet, you have these novice monks that are spinning dishes on top of these slender poles. What they're doing is they're twirling prayers off into divine space. Now, the novice monk might think, I'm not sure I want to be a monk. You know, I think I should get married and have a family, or I really want to go into business. I think this is kind of absurd what I'm doing. But it's going through the motions of spinning these prayers that they become a monk. You know, you become what you pretend to be. Salvador Dali was morbidly shy as a young boy. He hid in the basement from people. Whenever someone asked him something, his face would turn crimson and he would stutter. And his uncle one day went down to the basement and said, Salvador, the secret to life, to living life, is to be an actor. Act like you're an extrovert. Pretend you are an actor. and go through the motions of being an extrovert every day, which he did, and over time became the most celebrated extroverted artist in history by going through the motions.
Well, you know, I understand. Excuse me, Michael, but I understand that there's some research that if you take on some trait and you stick with it for 30 days, that somehow there's a shift so that it automatically, after 30 days, becomes part of you.
Oh, sure. It's going through the motions. You become what you pretend to be. You know, the CIA did some research on facial profiling, and they had these researchers, you know, thinking about emotion and facial types and all that. And then one day they each put a pencil in their mouth that forced them to smile all day long, even though they weren't thinking about smiling and had no intention to smile. And then they realized at the end of the day, they said, boy, I felt better today than I felt in a long time. And the others said the same thing. They said, that's amazing. So the next day, they inserted the pencil that made them frown all day long. And then at the end of that day, they said, today I felt depressed and lousy all day long. And the other one said the same thing. And just by forcing a smile or a frown can determine your emotional attitude toward life. It was an amazing discovery. And you can discover that for yourself, you know, by forcing yourself to smile. You go to a wedding, for example, and you're depressed. And everybody there is happy. Now, you don't want to appear depressed because that'll be a downer for everybody at the wedding. So you start to mimic the people who are laughing and joking and having a good time. What you'll notice is, before long, you will become happy. You know, Da Vinci, when he painted the Madonna, Mona Lisa, he noticed that all portraits seemed to be gloomy. And he attributed that to the environment the artists were using when they painted portraits. So what he did was he hired musicians and jesters to come into his studio to play and joke with him while he painted the Mona Lisa. And then it came out with this incredible smile on this portrait that has mesmerized people throughout history. You know, you become what you pretend to be.
Well, what I like about your book is that even though you're giving a lot of examples on the show,
right,
your book is filled with so many more understandings of how this works,
right,
so that we can manage our days. We can look at our environment and say, how is my environment conditioning me? How
right.
can I shift,
you know,
that?
Your life is how you interact with your environment. Perception is not a passive process. It's an active process. Einstein was once asked, you know, how he thought. In a letter, he responded that all experiences are neutral. They have no meaning at all. It's how you interpret those experiences that give you your axioms in life. And these axioms that you get shape the theories that you have about life, and the theories that you have will determine what you observe in life, which in turn will reconfirm your theory. But always forgotten that everything is all based on that original interpretation of your experience. The experiences are neutral. It's you who constructs the world. For example, I'm walking down the street and a girl bumps into me. That has no meaning at all. I could say, well, she's an aggressive feminist and bumped into me on purpose to prove that she's the dominant personality on the sidewalk. Or I could say, I'm getting old, I should watch more carefully where I walk. Or I could say, the architect has really poorly designed these sidewalks so that, you know, people can't avoid each other and are bumping into each other. Or I could say, I think she's flirting with me. I give it the meaning.
Right.
You know, Abraham Lincoln had all kinds of adversity in his life. He failed running for office about 26 different times. He went bankrupt in business twice. He fell in love with this woman whose family wouldn't let her have anything to do with Abe. because they didn't think they were fine enough people, that they were the equivalent of trailer trash at that time. And eventually he became president of the United States, and when asked what made him so strong and viable a leader, he said, adversity. You must welcome adversity in your life, because overcoming adversity makes your character and gives you strength. Now, Charlie Manson, on the other hand, had the adversity of being in prison, and so his interpretation was, the world is evil, everything is bad, therefore I should kill people. It's how you interpret life. Gary Gilmore, who was the first person who was executed in a long time in the United States, you know, he said, like, it was my family, my mother, a dysfunctional family, made me what I am. But always forgotten is he has a brother who's a PhD, and he had another brother, you know, who's a very successful businessman.
Right. We always get to choose.
They had the same experiences. They interpreted it differently.
Right. Right. So we can look at how we're holding things.
Right.
And then find ways to condition ourselves. I think it's not always that we can just choose to be happy. But maybe we can
go to
a wedding.
Right. You have to go through the motions. You know, if you want to become an artist, and if all you did each day was paint a picture, you will become an artist. You may not become a Vincent Van Gogh, but you will become more of an artist than someone who has never tried. It's how we interact with our environment. Viktor Frankl, a Jewish scholar, was in a concentration camp in World War II. And he saw these people who lost the will to live and just die and give up. And he was in a horrible circumstances, you know, beyond imagination. And he realized the only way he could survive was to come up with an interpretation that would give him hope. So he imagined himself as a professor on sabbatical, studying man's inhumanity to man, and how they do it and what they think. And he's writing all these lectures about the lectures that he was going to give after he survived the concentration camp. And he did survive, and he did give these lectures. But by going through the motions in the concentration camp, he gave himself the will to live.
It's having purpose.
Right.
And now I also want to talk about what's in your book, about how to be on purpose but not put pressure on yourself.
Well, yeah, putting pressure, that's kind of nonsensical. You have to work hard. Bertrand Russell, for example, he said his working method was he'd work hard on a problem for 2 months. Then he'd walk away from the problem for 1 month. And what happens is, after you have fed your mind by working on a problem, that information does not dissipate or go away. It's in your subconscious mind, bits of information. And the problem is being incubated and combining and recombining in a billion different ways. So that one day when you're not thinking about the problem at all, you might be taking a shower or riding in your automobile, suddenly an idea will appear out of nowhere. It'll be the solution to your problem. Charles Darwin said he can remember the rock that his carriage hit when suddenly his theory of biological evolution all came to him at once. Einstein was working on the theory of relativity, and he said he had a headache one night. He had a storm in his head, and it was painful, and he went to bed, and he said the next day he woke up, and everything was clear. You know, this is where that myth comes from, divine inspiration, that geniuses are special people, and they get their inspiration from God. It just happens. It doesn't just happen. It happens after you work hard on a problem and then let the information incubate, because when it's incubating, it's combining, not logically, but simply combining any way it can with other information in your mind.
So when you're programming yourself, you use your homework.
Yeah.
You do the homework, but then you let it go, and you trust the process of your subconscious, your unconscious mind, keeping the burn going.
Right. Norman Mailer, the author, whenever he was stonewalled, would sometimes he'd even write a letter to his unconscious mind saying, I'm stonewalled, I don't know what to do this case. Let me know the minute you come up with an answer and then forget about it. And then a week later, 2 weeks later, the idea would suddenly appear. You know, it's your subconscious mind never stops working, and it doesn't work in a logical, linear way. Like, suppose you want to improve the can opener. And, you know, you're thinking about can openers, and you're thinking about how do things open on Earth, you know. How does a car window open? How do you open a relationship? How do you open a beer bottle? How do you open all these many things? You're thinking about all these things. And then you forget about the problem. And then a month later, perhaps, you get the insight. You know, a pea pod opens when the seam weakens. Why not create a can with a weak seam that you pull to open the can instead of a can opener? You know, and these are the kinds of ideas you can't get using your logical, conventional way of thinking.
Right. And another way that you approach it is to hold the intention and just wander around in life, noticing things.
Right.
And all of a sudden you'll notice something that makes some sense that you could include it in your
right.
process, in your thinking.
Right. Like one technique I always use for myself and people I've used throughout history is what I call a thought walk. You know, you might be stonewalled with a problem. Well, forget the problem and just start walking. Take a walk through the city, the woods, the environment. And then try to make metaphorical, analogical connections with what you observe. Now, once I was working with a group of engineers in the Northwest, and the problem was ice on power lines. The ice would bring the power lines down, and they couldn't figure out a way to get rid of the ice. So they all went on a thought walk, and I asked them all to bring back something of interest to them that they thought was interesting. And then we would make metaphorical associations between what they brought back and the problem. One guy brings back a jar of honey. So, you know, they asked him, well, what is the connection between a jar of honey and ice on a power line? And he said, well, I thought you put the honey on top of all the power, a jar of honey on top of all the power poles, which will attract bears. Bears will climb the pole to get the honey. And when they climb the pole, they will vibrate the pole, and the vibrations will shake off the ice. And everybody laughed, and then one person said, that's the answer. When I was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam, I remember the strong downwash from helicopters. All we have to do is have helicopters hover above the lines that that we're having trouble with. And that was the solution to the problem. Now, Samuel Morse had a problem with a telegraph, and that they could not come up with a generator powerful enough to power the signal coast to coast. And he was stymied, and one day he was at a horse relay station thinking about the telegraph and the lack of power. And in the same mental space, he was thinking about horse relay stations. And that's when he got his insight. Periodic boost of power. Periodic boost of power, just like periodically changing your horses, mm-hmm. gave him the answer.
Uh-huh.
Nikola Tesla, one of the greatest inventors of all time, history kind of ignores him because he's a little, his behavior was bizarre to say the least. He was in love with a pigeon, for example, and he had a great fear of women who wore pearls. So he was very idiosyncratic. But he was thinking about the alternating current motor, and he was on the beach, and he was noticing the sun set. And then he suddenly got his insight, which is a rotating magnetic field inside the alternating current motor, which made it possible. His observation of how the sun rotated as it sunk on the horizon.
Well, now, this I want to start coming to a conclusion because this is fascinating work, and the book is terrific, and it's called Creative Thinkering, and I think everybody needs to read it to break open the stuckness that we have in ways we don't even know. And so there's so much in your book of ways that we can identify in ourselves how to do a better job. And I'm so glad that you wrote this. And I know that you go travel around and teach this to many different groups. How can people connect with you?
Well, my website, Peter, is www.creativethinking.net.
Okay, creativethinking.net. Michael Michalko.
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 And, M-I-C-H-A-L-K-O.
Okay, thank you for clearing that up. I'm glad that you could connect with us today.
Thank you for inviting me, Peter. I enjoyed it.
Sure, and all the best with Creative Thinkering.
Okay, and, thank you, Peter.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stewart Progressive Radio Network, and I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. And thank you so much for listening.